Howdy, partners. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Howdy Partners podcast, where we give you tactical tips and tricks on how to become a great partner professional. We've got a nice crew on the podcast today. Excited to dive in. But Tom, first of all, a long time no see. How are you doing? How's life?
I'm doing pretty good. As I was mentioning before, I'm flying solo as a parent this week for 6 days. Tomorrow's the last day. It's going great, but it is the real deal. And then Will was in Denver yesterday for Catalyst and ghosted me on meeting up. So we've got a bone to pick with him when he gets back on the pod.
He's a social butterfly, man. You can't lock him down, right?
The guy talks about relationship building and building trust so much that, you know, I think we've got to have him give a statement. So we'll see if that happens next episode.
Yeah, for sure. And we have another great guest on the podcast today. Really excited to get into the conversation. We have Chad Oder on the call. Chad, do you want to give the audience a little bit of an introduction to who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, pleasure to be here. Love what you guys do. Been following the podcast for a while now, and you guys are hitting it out of the park. So quick intro with me. I'm an entrepreneur and go-to-market leader who consults Fortune 500 companies. You know, I've consulted companies like CVS Health, Microsoft, specifically on conversational AI and workflow automation. Also have run my own podcast previously, which I'm sure we can kind of chat about in regards to some of the nearbound angles. I've run, you know, meetups with, you know, thousands of members. So that's just kind of the short and sweet pitch about me.
Cool. Love it, mate. Yeah. And you mentioned the word nearbound, which I think we're going to get into in some depth on the podcast today. Love to start off kind of, you know, as a partnership with this podcast, just on your journey into partnerships. I know you already mentioned the term nearbound, but would love to kind of understand and explain to the audience your background in partnerships.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. And when you are the non-technical person in, you know, a technical startup, you know, the onus is on you really to lead all go-to-market efforts, right? So it pretty much necessitates that you have to go out there and figure out partnerships, sales, marketing. So back in 2015, this was one of my earlier companies. We were essentially doing software development, web applications, mobile apps for small businesses. And at the time, my kind of introductory foray into partnerships, I didn't even realize it was partnerships at the time, was I used to go to a lot of business networking meetups. And, you know, I think like most people, they try to do that, you know, one-to-one-to-one-to-one, you know, talking to all these people individually. And over time, I just kind of learned, hey, well, if I just make friends with the guy that is hosting the meetup, then I can better get signal to who I should talk to in that meetup. And then over, you know, that kind of, the initial journey point, you know, from there, I went on to, you know, running my own company, another company called Chat Mode, which is, you know, where we primarily focus on conversational AI and workflow automation. You know, I ran podcasts, ran meetups, recently worked at another Web3 startup where I was managing a $40 million partnership. So, you know, I've kind of stumbled my way through this. I think like most entrepreneurs, then you kind of find out what works and you experiment with stuff. And sometimes you kind of learn really neat things that often scale really nicely.
Yeah. And I think we all kind of stumble into partnerships, to be honest with you. I don't think that's a rare path. I think we've talked about before. I came from customer success into partnerships. And Tom, I think you sales, correct? Sales partner?
No, I was on the agency side. So kind of CSM strategy, managed the video production department, and then into SaaS. It resonates. Just crazy. There will be a time where there's going to be partnership specific majors at universities. There's going to be a time where we're actually hiring people that have true partnership experience, but it's fun to learn about everyone's background and kind of how you got there.
Yeah. Love it. And Chad, I think you touched on a couple of things, and again, I agree with you, like the referral type relationship that you're explaining, which is, hey, I'm going to meet up with business owners, develop relationships, and then as a byproduct, potentially generate business. I mean, that at its essence is what a partnership is. And I think we tend to have this thing of making it too difficult partnerships sometimes and trying to think of these really technical, you know, integration partnerships. But fundamentally, those types of referral partnerships have been, you know, around for hundreds of years, right? In terms of partnerships. And I think that is one component of what we know as the concept of Nearbound, right? Developing relationships to get closer to your buyer. Obviously, Jared Fuller has been a big proponent, and Reveal have kind of been touting the concept of Nearbound. Maybe you could give us a bit of a, I don't know, perspective and idea of what Nearbound kind of means to you, and maybe touch on, you know, your experience with Nearbound as a concept.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll touch on that, and then I'll also kind of hone in on my most recent company that I exited called ChatMode, where I think we really kind of dialed in Nearbound without even really knowing it was Nearbound. But to me, you know, I think just kind of extending your point, you know, I think Nearbound really ultimately is building those relationship networks, you know, and oftentimes, you know, we build these really great networks and we get referrals or we get introductions and we don't realize that, you know, this is actually Nearbound. We've been doing it for a long time. And over my career, most of, you know, the biggest accounts I've closed, Fortune 500 customers, were from referrals and from building relationships and getting introductions and, you know, trying to figure out, like, how do I best kind of learn, you know, what this prospective partner wants, you know, and oftentimes we really figured out really creative ways to understand that. And for me, at my most recent company, ChatMode, ran that for about four and a half years. And we were a Microsoft professional services provider, essentially developing chatbots all the way back in 2018 before anyone thought they were cool. Now everyone's talking about them. And also doing a lot of workflow automation. So on things like Microsoft Power Platform, Power Automate, Power Apps, things of that nature. And I think the most exciting thing for me was, like, you look at a lot of these different partner professional services companies and they think, oh, well, you need to get the silver, you know, certification and the gold certification, all these cloud certifications. And we were super small and nimble. And we said, you know, hey, we don't have time to do those things. So sometimes, you know, you can break the rules, right? And we figured out a way to partner closely with Microsoft field sellers. And at the end of building those relationships, we got introduced to a number of different field sellers across the organization, CSMs, account managers, account directors. And from that, we drove a significant amount of revenue in pipeline.
I want to double tap on that because a couple of roles ago, I used to run partnerships at a company called Brainstorm, very big in the Microsoft MSP ecosystem. And it's really interesting, a point you just made, which is that certifications, any, you know, big cloud hyperscaler, the certifications are almost like a badge of honor, a badge of trust. And so I think what you've explained there is kind of interesting in terms of you actually built up the relationship directly with the sellers and earned that trust rather than, you know, spending a ton of time, resources, and energy going out and getting those certifications. Would that kind of be fair in terms of how you sit?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. So you probably have seen in the partner ecosystem, it doesn't matter what partner ecosystem, but if you partner with a hyperscaler, you look at a lot of these kind of older professional services or system integrators, and you'll ask them, hey, has this hyperscaler ever given you leads? And they'll be like, yeah, maybe one or two over the past 5 years, right? But we were getting the majority of our pipeline through our hyperscaler, right? So I think the distinction to your point is, like, really spending the time to build the relationships with some of the folks that are on the ground, talking to install-based customers, going after net new customers, and building that trust and rapport. And oftentimes you just need one. You know, yep. So for us, we built it with one of these accounts at Microsoft. We were already in there. We got introduced actually from the prospective customer to the Microsoft CSM that was in the account. And we ended up just building this really solid relationship over the years. And then he started introducing us to other field sellers and other CSMs. And, you know, that kind of blossomed into this really great partnership.
Yeah. And it's another concept of Nearbound, I think, from like a validation, again, badge of honor perspective, you can get a joint customer. I think that is like the ultimate seal of approval where it becomes like, okay, Microsoft field seller and us together, and we achieved X effect for our joint customer. I think that's where the magic really starts to happen, because if you're able to benefit them, which is ultimately the sign of a good partnership, right? That mutual relationship. I think that's another concept of like, okay, let's build a case study on how we work together and then kind of extrapolate that out across other accounts. Sorry, Tom, I knew you were going to jump in and say.
No, I was just going to jump in and talk about the idea of like certifications, and ultimately it boils down to, are you focusing your efforts and your resources in the areas that are actually going to drive value? So you mean like relationship building is key. And it's funny because like we're in a very similar situation where, you know, like we're very light, very nimble. And I mentioned that I was like, we don't have the resources to build out, you know, we can't build the HubSpot yet. We can't build all these assessments. And on the flip side from, you know, like channel partners or like service-based agencies, that's all it is, Chad. Like you mentioned a really good point, which is it's kind of like a badge of honor. And what I would add to that though, is that sometimes that is very important to partners, like accreditation and recognition is really like the crux of like building that relationship. But it comes back to, you don't need a badge to do that. You don't need to take this assessment to be certified to be able to help enable your customers on this product. It's much more like, how can, like, what's the value that you can extrapolate? And it doesn't need to be at 100% of everything to build the right partnerships. And I just appreciate you kind of mentioning that.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe I'll add on to that a little bit too, Tom, just in regards to like, what was the value that we provided and, you know, kind of why those relationships were sustainable. And also I'll provide kind of nuance too, because I think sometimes certifications don't kind of cover all of the product offerings, but some of the product offerings were so new, they just didn't have certs. So I think that was kind of the nuance that we fell into because, you know, we were doing a lot of like AI stuff and, you know, building chatbots and doing workflow automation. And I think in certain cases, there wasn't even a cert that kind of covered that. So maybe that also provided us that kind of opportunity to break the rules a little bit. But when it came to the actual, you know, go-to-market leaders and field sellers and CSMs on the ground, I think what we identified was just like, you know, in some cases, they want to get a POC and put it in front of their customers, you know, as quickly as possible. And, you know, oftentimes like these bigger conglomerate, you know, consultancies, they just can't do that or they won't do that, right? And they'll say, well, you got to pay me this much amount of money. So we kind of identified early on, hey, if we can build some turnkey demos, get it in front of these guys or girls, you know, much quicker, you know, that was something they really valued, you know, from us as we were kind of working with them. You know, the other thing too, you know, is we would always ask like, hey, what's on your scorecard, right? What is going to allow you to hit your quotas and, you know, drive licensing or consumption? You know, it's always this two-way street. The other thing I did, just taking it to the next level, and then I'll pause here because I could talk about this for a long time. So I also, at the time, I also had started a podcast where we were interviewing Microsoft employees that kind of fit under our service offering, right? And it, in addition to people on the product side, so we can learn more about the product, we also interviewed people on the GTM side too, right? So we can really get that perspective of how are they thinking about this product offering internally? What are they seeing, you know, as they talk to customers about this? So that just gives us a much better perspective and a way to kind of resonate with them, you know, versus a lot of times you have these different, you know, professional services providers just knocking on the doors of every field seller at the hyperscaler. And it's like, you don't even know what we care about, right? And you're asking us for leads, right? So.
Yeah, it's the podcast route is really interesting. And I think like, so Chad, I'm starting my own startup at the moment and we've been talking about this. And I actually think a podcast is always a net positive, even if it's not to generate net new leads, but develop relationships. And so I think when you talk about the concept of Nearbound, which is surrounding your target buyer with people that can influence the decision-making criteria, you have somebody on a podcast that maybe isn't going to buy from you, but is like a node, right? Which is then able to make introductions. I think that's where the power of a podcast comes from. And so, yeah, I've talked to a couple of people that have podcasts for their B2B SaaS business, and their opinion's been like, look, we haven't generated like net new revenue. We can't really show like a bottom line figure that's attributed to this effort that we're putting in recording and editing and all this type of stuff. But what they have said undeniably is they've got introductions through the people they've had on the podcast, and that has, you know, equated to revenue further down the line. And so I don't know if you kind of saw that from your experience as well.
Yeah, so I have two separate cases. So initially when I was getting into chatbots and AI, I started a podcast called The Bot Podcast, and I was running that for about 6 months. And then at the end of 6 months, I think I probably did like 15 podcasts. And then a couple months later, I got invited to essentially moderate a panel at one of the top chatbot conferences in Berlin, right? Cool. So it's just that acceleration of not really knowing anyone in the ecosystem, you know, putting in 6 months of time, meeting this wide variety of, you know, really smart subject matter experts. And then, you know, that kind of gives you that social proof and ability to connect with people that you otherwise wouldn't be able to get access to, right? And then you're then given all these opportunities, to your point. And, you know, I definitely also resonate with that point of hard to correlate a bottom line oftentimes with podcasts, but oftentimes getting in those rooms with these executives, you know, or these startups and these founders that have run kind of nine-figure businesses is just an amazing opportunity. And then the second podcast I was running when I was running Chat Mode, which was Microsoft focused, you know, I think a lot of people often think about, you know, when they run a podcast, it's like, yeah, let's interview our customers or let's interview other partners that we work with, you know. But for us, it was like, because we were a Microsoft partner, the obvious one was let's interview Microsoft employees. And I don't see that as much with professional services or consultancies that, you know, let's say they work really closely with Amazon or Google. It's like, instead of trying to interview...
It's genius. I mean, it's a technique I've never seen, but the more that I'm thinking about it, it's so clever to do, because the other thing about a podcast is it's like, it's non-transactional. In actual fact, you're giving them something, which is like, look, I really value you as a person. I value your experience. And so I'd love for you to come and teach it to the rest of the world, which gives them kind of another badge of honor, to my point earlier, right? Which is like, now I get to come on a podcast, talk about stuff that I know about. And so I think it's genius from a couple of angles. One, non-transactional, so it gets you into Microsoft accounts, into field sellers very easily. It's not like you're reaching out and being like, hey, buy my chatbot. It's actually like, you know, come on to my podcast. But then it also probably spreads like wildfire throughout the Microsoft field seller teams, where you probably were getting people emailing you like, Chad, I'd love to jump on your podcast. Did that happen at all? Did you have people organically reach out and ask to appear?
So I had organic people, and I also had several occasions where I would get introduced to field sellers from other field sellers. And when I got on the calls, they would be like, oh yeah, we've been watching your content on LinkedIn. So like, you already kind of have that social proofing already walking into these rooms, and it's just fantastic to do that. And to your point, right, it also, you get to elevate other employees at Microsoft too. So they get to evangelize their story, and maybe their boss sees that, and you know, maybe that helps them get kind of a promotion or something too. So. Yeah. There's a lot of value there.
I think there's also a tie-in. You mentioned, you called out LinkedIn, but I think there's a similar play. And again, we'll get into additional tactics of Nearbound that I think work really well. But again, like, LinkedIn is another outlet to let people know how knowledgeable you are on a certain area as well, right? And so like, if I'm a PRM company right now, right? Like, I'm trying to sell a partner relationship management tool, I would literally be on LinkedIn. I would pull up 30 people to talk about partnerships a ton on LinkedIn. They're my influencers. I'll either pay them or I'll get them on as referral partners. I'll then look at the top 5 podcasts, this being one, and either get my field sellers on the podcast, sponsor the podcast. And so what you're doing, and Jay McBain refers to it as like your spheres of influence or your watering holes where people go to consume content. There's actually a fairly replicable playbook. And to your point, Chad, it's like, you did the same, but your angle was more tied to, how do I just get more Microsoft seller attention? And your play was, well, I'm going to get them on a podcast and they know who I am. And then guess what? I've given them something, which is, you know, advertisement of their skills. And as a result, that principle of reciprocity, which is now like, if I reach out and ask them for an introduction, guess what? There's a high likelihood that they'll be willing to make that intro.
I'll also really quickly tell you the other crazy tactic that we did too, which I haven't seen anyone else do this before. So, because we were working on like such like cutting edge features, so we would look at the features that were still in beta at Microsoft. So they have like these, you know, they have features that are not publicly available yet. So what we would do is we would go build a proof of concept on these features, and then we would go reach out to the product managers at Microsoft that own those features. And then we would get on calls with them. And of course, they want to get feedback on their features before it goes live, right?
Yeah.
And then through those relationships, we were also able to get them to introduce us to field sellers and CSMs. So that's kind of another backdoor tactic I haven't seen a lot of people do. In order to scale that, what we did was, a lot of people use automation, right, to reach out, you know, with messaging, you know, across different platforms. A lot of people do it oftentimes to drive, you know, net new customers, but we kind of turned, you know, that lens onto Microsoft instead of net new customers, right? So we were able to scale messaging out to a bunch of them. And the ones that were amenable, we would get on calls and we'd say, hey, you know, like, I know you work on this product. Here's the POC we built. Can you tell us, like, you know, who are some of the folks in the field that are going to be selling this? And, you know, we would love to connect with them.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things to pull out from that, but like, you've almost made it easy for them to partner with you in terms of like, you've done the heavy lifting in terms of actually creating a proof of concept and building it out. And I think like, there's similar overlaps in terms of if you think about like integration partnerships in general, right? Like if I'm a smaller company looking to integrate into larger company, it's kind of cool if you can either build out like a proof of concept or, you know, write a little bit of script, which you can then send off to a product manager to be like, hey, I've already built this integration out. What do you think? Yep. And so you're already presenting the vision, you're already getting them excited, and you're already getting them to a stage of being like, okay, like one, they mean business, but also they've shown that they're going to be a good partner before you even partner, right? And so I kind of like that as a concept. So that's kind of cool. Tell me about like the results. So you've talked about like some of the tactics you've tried, and they're great tactics. Kind of what were the results for your business in terms of the like the overall, you know?
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. So I'll give you a kind of a business metric. So from 2021 to 2022, I was able to drive a 126% revenue increase.
Wow.
From opening up those partnerships. Also through that, you know, I was able to, you know, scale significantly. So there was there's a company in the Fortune 5. I won't name which one, but Microsoft was in there pretty heavily, and we were in there as well. And through that relationship building with Microsoft and the customer, you know, we were able to really expand the work we were doing in that account. We were able to also run an innovation hackathon internally, which was amazing to hear all these different business use cases, which ultimately we drove business for. We also were able to open up a specific focus inside of higher education. And oftentimes we were getting brought into those meetings before RFPs went out.
Love it. Love it. And so you're almost like pipping people to the post because you've already got that established relationship. I mean, that's the ideal use case, right? Where like even before an RFP goes out, you're already top of their mind where it's like, oh yeah, like these guys know what they're on about. And so as part of that process, were you already scoping the solution prior to an RFP being kind of submitted? Is that how it worked?
Exactly. Right. So it's just like, because like you have the customer success managers that are already in these install base accounts, so they know the problems on a day-to-day basis and like opportunities for what these existing customers are dealing with, right? So then I would have the knowledge, and then I would go into these meetings, and then we would kind of talk about it and start kind of scoping the stuff out informally. And by the time the RFP rolls around, it's like, oh, a lot of the points that we talked about are kind of in here. So it's always kind of a lot, you know, better odds, you know, when you get a talk, you know, in that kind of respect.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, a lot of what you've covered today is like fundamentally what it comes down to. We talked about a couple of things. We talked about tactics and strategies, which are like, okay, here are some unique things that you did. But I think fundamentally it comes down to the building of relationships. And I always go back to, okay, if you're not getting value out of partnerships in your partnership program at the moment, the sales team can unlock that, candidly. Like, if your direct sales team are on board with partnerships, then there's a high likelihood that you will be able to generate value and growth in your partnership program. And so what you did with like the Microsoft field sellers, I don't see enough people do with their own sales team, whether that be internal enablement or external enablement. You're going into your partner sales teams, developing relationships, doing lunch and learn, stuff like that. Salespeople are pretty, and this is going to sound rude, I don't mean it to sound rude, are pretty simple people in the way that what they want to do is close new business. Fundamentally, that's what it comes down to, right? And so if you're able to show them that through your partnership, you are going to help them close more business, expand accounts, it's a no-brainer. And so what you've done in previous roles, which I love, is like, let me develop a relationship with you, Microsoft field team, but fundamentally, let me show you how I can help you, which is the value statement, right? And so I don't know if you've got kind of any anecdotal evidence or stories around like particularly great relationships you had with the field teams and like, I don't know, any feedback you got from them around an account or anything like that.
Yeah. So I think the first relationship that we built, he was just so incredibly happy with our ability to, you know, come out with proof of concepts, you know, every time he would pull us on a call with his customers. And it's just like, especially in some of these sectors, like seeing is believing, right? Yep. And it's like, he was just so happy with that. He was just willing to make introductions to us, to other field sellers he knew. And then we eventually were speaking to the directors across regions and in discussing like running like regional campaigns. So it just really takes one, right? Just do a really good job and figure out like, how do you make the seller's life easier? How do you understand what is on the field seller's scorecard that they care about? And the metrics change, right? From like quarter to quarter, there will be different things they're trying to push. So just having that kind of awareness and understanding of like, you know, yes, you run a business and you're trying to drive revenue, but at the same time, it, to your point, it has to be predicated on value for both parties. And then I think there's another circumstance where we were in that Fortune 5 company, and you know, we were actually pulled in by Microsoft to address this really significant opportunity. And there's a really tight timeline, and we were able to execute and get that thing out in about a month and a half. And there was very, very significant like executive eyeballs on this thing, and we executed on that. And then that allowed us to, you know, then do that that internal hackathon, which was across the company. And we really got to see all these other use cases inside the company.
The Microsoft scorecard is one I know very well. So we provided like training software for Microsoft. And so somebody would deploy Office into their environment, and our whole value proposition would be tied to like, we'll let them actually utilize the tools that they've paid for. But again, to your point, we had to align to their scorecard, which was tied to adoption. And so we used to get a ton of leads over because we're like, hey, on your scorecard, you need to increase Teams adoption by 30%. Well, guess what's a core component of that training? And so again, to your point, went out, developed relationships with their field sellers, showed them how we could fundamentally make them hit their bonuses and their metrics, and the leads just flowed in. And again, once you've got one good customer that you've done it with, all the rest kind of follow, right? So yeah, I know that story exceptionally well. But we've touched on a lot in terms of nearbound tactics. You mentioned podcasts, developing relationships, all this great stuff. And so I thought we could end with just maybe, what's one kind of daily practice that can, you know, make partner managers more successful, and maybe just focus on the concept of nearbound and what you'd recommend to anybody listening in to go and try, you know, in order to drive their partnership programs forward?
Yeah. Oh man, this is a hard one. You're having me give one.
You give two. You give two. You can give three. Yeah. Any tactics.
So I actually wrote four down real quickly. So I think the first one really quick is mine your existing accounts, right? If you can get introductions to other partners that are operating in your existing install base accounts and start building relationships with them, they may have visibility into other departments that you don't have, or, you know, they understand other problems that you have no visibility to. So it's just like, that's a great opportunity, especially if you have really good rapport with your existing install base account, and you just say, hey, you know, what other vendors do you partner with? That's a really good opportunity to start connecting the dots there with some other partners. Could be hyperscalers like Microsoft, or it could be smaller vendors. So I think that's a start. Secondly, you know, we echoed this continuously on this podcast here, but, you know, really understand the scorecard, right? And every single company or partner is going to have a different scorecard. And those things often change quarter by quarter with new product launches and new features that get rolled out. So really have a good awareness of where your partner's trying to go. Thirdly, I think this has been kind of the most, one of our mantras, you know, when we were running the company before I exited, was just don't be afraid to break the rules. And, you know, think about, you know, if conventional wisdom is saying all partners, you know, all the professional services, consulting companies, system integrators are doing one thing, maybe look at what is the opposite approach and just experiment, you know. Break the rules. Don't break them too big, but you know, you can break some rules once in a while, especially if you can create value. And then I think the final thing, and you mentioned this as well, is, you know, if you can interview on a podcast their GTM, you know, that could be field sellers, CSMs, account managers, marketing folks, even you can just get a wealth of information. You can build that rapport. You can build the social proofing. So if their colleagues end up seeing it on the LinkedIn feed and they say, oh, this guy liked it. It's just a great, great conversation starter.
Yeah, love it. Cool. All right. Well, Chad, like I said, thanks so much for jumping on. I think there's been a ton of really good stuff that I've pulled from the call today. Everybody that's listening, find Chad on LinkedIn if you want to follow up with some of this stuff. I'm sure he'll be happy to chat. But Chad, thanks so much for spending time with us today, and we hope to have you on again.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure. A really fun time.